Welcome to Rogue Cell Radio, where we dig deep into stories of leadership, service, and the impact of community with the goal of reduce veteran suicide and inspire camaraderie. I'm your host, Sean, and as always, I'm joined here by our producer, Brad.
Hey.
So let's get started. This is Rogue Cell Radio. Brad, I understand that you're very excited about the guests that we have lined up today.
That's right. I am. Today, we're diving into a story of leadership, service, and unexpected reunions with a little bit of mathematics. Retired Coast Guard officers Dan Pickles and Phil Eero first met at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. Dan is an instructor. Phil is a cadet. And years later, their paths crossed again, this time in the halls of Astoria High School, where they now teach math together. From navigating the high seas to guiding students through equations, Dan and Phil prove that service doesn't end with retirement. It simply evolves.
Well, all right. Well, let's get into it. I do have a lot of questions about the Coast Guard and the Coast Guard Academy. Yeah. You know, we always talked about the different branches of military. And yeah, we'll give Air Force a hard time, even Navy a little bit. But we never really talked about the Coast Guard. I didn't really understand it until I was teaching college and I was teaching veterans specifically at Mount Hood Community College. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of Coast Guard in there. And I didn't know that they did so much law enforcement. Not only are you out on the coasts, but the Great Lakes, all over the United States. And so let's just jump into it. What did you guys do in the Coast Guard?
You can go first, Dan.
You started first. Yeah,
I did a bunch of different things in the Coast Guard. I like to break my career into kind of three categories. My major was electrical engineering. And so I did some engineering in the Coast Guard. I got a master's degree at the University of Rhode Island and then worked on some electrical engineering projects regarding differential GPS. With the second aspect of my career, I would say is shipboard operations. So I spent 10 years afloat on a bunch of different ships, commanded two ships, one a patrol boat over in Sandy Hook, New Jersey. And then another one here, we had a medium endurance cutter right out of Astoria, Oregon. They just recently left, went around to be relocated in Florida. But I had commanded that for a couple of years.
And wow. So you were a captain. Forgive my ignorance, but you were a captain of a ship?
I was. Yes.
But a captain is not a captain like in the Army. A captain is a different rank in the Coast Guard?
Yeah, it's a lieutenant colonel.
What O is? Mm-hmm. Okay.
O-5.
Okay, O-5.
And then wow. I finished up my career in law enforcement policy. So the district
and still in the Coast Guard was law enforcement.
Yep. So from the alert, I went over to the East Coast, so Mid-Atlantic region, Virginia, for running those operations in the Mid-Atlantic. And then my last couple of years were in California running the counter drug operations.
See, that's what I was going to ask. Like, what do you do if you're law enforcement in the Coast Guard? Is it mostly drugs or is it
drugs and migrant interdiction operation,
immigration?
So you've seen maybe that's really picked up lately. Mm-hmm. In Southern California region. I was there for another period where there was a pretty big uptick in migrant ops.
So how long were you in the Coast Guard total?
24 years active duty, 4 years in the academy. So
wow,
28
wow.
years wearing a uniform.
And that's where you were in 05 when you got out?
I retired as an 06 as a captain. Yeah.
So you can be captain with 5 and 6 or just?
There's a position captain and there's a rank captain. You can be captain of the ship as an 02 and some boat spots.
Like a really small boat with
two
people rowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm learning a lot.
You guys both went to the academy then?
Yes.
You did.
Yeah.
So the Coast Guard Cutter Eagle, you both served on that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you guys absolutely both served on the Eagle. I've been tracking it
all
on
the
Ray Tracker all day. Just to see.
My understanding is every cadet does, right?
Absolutely. Every.
Wow.
Yes.
So every cadet does. But then when I went back to the Coast Guard Academy to teach, to maintain my navigation skills and afloat operations, abilities. I spent 6 weeks each summer on Eagle.
You did your summertime there?
And I did my summer training on Eagle, got qualified as a ship driver.
But that thing, it goes all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's a three mast. And again, I'm ignorant on ships. The only thing I was ever on was a Zodiac. We did an amphibious attack on the Isle of Wight in England. But it was training. We didn't really attack the English. So what would you call that type of ship? I mean, it seems like it's really old.
It's a bark.
A bark.
B-A-R-Q-U-E.
Yeah. So
like the root beer.
So the first two masts are rigged beam to beam, and then the last one is rigged fore and aft.
So we didn't really get into what you did.
Oh, I didn't serve as much as Dan. No worries. I did 4 years at the academy and then 11 years active duty, and then I separated. So I did not retire from the Coast Guard. After the academy, I did 4 years on ships out of Hawaii, and I did a lot of aids and navigation, ship driving, and law enforcement. So I did a lot of fisheries and migrants.
What do you do in fisheries?
They're 200 miles offshore from any U.S. territory is the U.S. fishing waters, and other countries are not allowed to fish there commercially. And so I would go on board Korean vessels that are fishing illegally in the South Pacific U.S. waters and write tickets, seize logs, that kind of stuff.
I had no idea. Wow, this is crazy.
And then I did specialize in Chinese migrant interdiction. So like working, like combating the Chinese mafia and, you know, stopping human trafficking on the spot. So I've done some of that.
Oh my gosh.
And after 4 years there, I went to Stanford, got a couple of master's degrees so I could teach at the academy. I think I taught right before you got there. I left.
Yeah.
So I taught statistics and calculus at the Coast Guard Academy.
So it sounds like my introduction was a little bit incorrect.
That's okay. Yeah.
I mean, it was
a little bit. And I didn't do the 20. I did. After 3 years there, I tried going ashore and I worked in the command center in Key West, Florida, coordinating missions. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't enjoy the stress without the activity.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you guys. How did you go from being in the Coast Guard to showing up here in Astoria and teaching at the high school, teaching math?
I think we both had similar paths where we both ended up teaching at the Coast Guard Academy as officers. We both were, that was part of our duties, was to go and teach. So I went back and taught math in the department that I was as a student, and you went back and taught electrical engineering in the department where you were a student. So I got a free taste of it. When I was in the military, and I just loved teaching. It was, if I couldn't be afloat, I wanted to be a teacher. So for me, I decided to resign and pursue teaching as a profession.
I think you have more education than I do. I do have a master's degree, but you had to get a degree in teaching as well, correct?
I have two master's degrees, not in education, and I went to go for a third in education, and I got about halfway through and I was like, I'm just going to get my teaching license and just...
Oh, that's what I meant. I never got a teaching license, but when you have an MFA, you can teach college, but you can't teach high school.
Yeah. And so you did the full...
I did the full second degree, so I've got two master's. Mm-hmm. Teaching at the academy was ideal. All the students were there. They were respectful. They're all smart.
They all volunteered to be there, trying hard to get through.
If you did have a behavior problem, which was very rare, it was easily corrected by either talking to them, talking to their company officer. And there were many, many tools, demerits, to get those, get students in line and motivated. And that was the biggest challenge that I had coming to high school, where it was a whole different world. Mm-hmm. They did not come to attention when I stepped into the room for some reason.
You people.
They did not call me sir. They did not salute. And yeah, it was a whole different ball game. So that was probably the biggest
to motivate them
transition. Yeah. Challenge that I had. They call that classroom management, I think.
Yeah.
Did you end up using the tools that you were trained in the military for what you're doing today? In a different way, I guess?
A little bit. I mean, the idea of organization, the idea of integrity and accountability, those things immediately translate into teaching. I mean, if a student doesn't trust a teacher, they're never going to listen to that teacher. So a teacher without integrity is useless. A teacher who's disorganized doesn't get the respect of their students. A teacher without compassion for their people. I mean, you could think of a commanding officer who doesn't care about his troops, and you know, you'll obey, but you're not loyal. Like, you know, that the difference between leadership and management. And I think a lot of the skills you learn as a leader, I mean, my first day teaching at the Coast Guard Academy, my former professor was like, teaching is leadership. You're here to lead, not teach. And I was like, yes, sir.
You're right. I mean, I feel like I did kind of, you know, dig into that toolbox of the leadership.
Yeah.
Specifically. And you just have to find different ways to motivate them to learn.
And a lot of the tools that I had that worked previously didn't work in a community college. And I had to have people who taught there be like, okay, you're not asking them why they're here. That's the first question you ask a student when they're struggling is, why are you even in the classroom? What is your goal? Why are you here? And whatever they say, that's your goal too. And once I started doing that, I started listening. And I started not worrying about the math and paying more attention to the person. And then the math, just like the education would start to fall into place. And that's when I had that paradigm shift in my head of, okay, this isn't about math. It's about the people. The math is, you know, the catalyst that we're teaching, but it's like helping people grow.
Yeah.
And that was like the best 2 years of my life was when I was teaching at CLATSIP.
So I guess this leads into the next question. Do you feel that teaching high school in this community is like an extension of your service?
It's a different kind of service, definitely. And I think one of the things that at least I tried to bring, and I'm not sure how successful I am, it depends on the day, but kind of that outside perspective. I mean, when you're in high school, you don't know what you don't know. There's a lot of students that, you know, haven't moved from Astoria or haven't been beyond the state or, you know, yeah, just the West Coast. And there's a great big world out there. And there are a lot of applications like, why am I doing this? Why is math important? Mm-hmm. And I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a math major, but I'm a user of the product. And I know.
I have a sneaking suspicion you probably need a little bit of math to be an electrical engineer.
Oh, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Do you actually use the imaginary numbers in electrical engineering?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. That's what I've been telling their son when he's like, why do we do this? And I was like, electrical engineering. There it is.
Yep. You can't always see the numbers.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part. And that's a lot of times the challenge of that transition to the next step. You know, people are really good. Like a lot of students love geometry. They can see the shapes. They can touch them. Mm-hmm. They can see what's happening. But when it gets a little bit more, you know, profound and theoretical, a lot of people start. Yeah.
Abstract mathematics.
My son is 30. He went to Oregon State University to be a nuclear engineer. And one Thanksgiving, he came home and he's like, Dad, check this out. And he write a bunch of gibberish on paper. And my math doesn't have numbers in it anymore. I stared at it for like 2 minutes. No, I'm just kidding.
Jeez. That happened this week. My calc students took a test and it was a hard test. And when they were done, one of the kids like, Mr. Ear, I never even picked up my calculator for the last 10 hours. Like I don't think I could have used my calculator on this. And I'm like, yeah, that's where we're at.
Is it like theory then? Is it like theoretical? I don't know how you would do that.
The level that we were proving things to be true or false, like, you know, like writing convincing mathematical arguments. So.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother language.
Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Your question about service, too. I mean, every job I've ever had since high school has been paid for by the taxpayer. Be it military, teaching at a community college, teaching at high schools. It's still service. You're serving your community.
Right.
That's the way I see it.
Was the academy both of yours first stop after high school or?
Yes. Was? Yeah.
Okay.
It was an eye-opening experience.
But I wanted to talk to you. So I was changing gears just a little bit. So you did come to our Veterans Day event that we had. We showed some of our documentary. In that documentary, we've driven about 4,000 miles around the state of Oregon so far in rural Oregon. We're trying to fight veteran suicide in rural communities. And one of the things that I learned just talking to people around the state was that one of the problems that veterans have when they go to a rural area is what they call social fragmentation, or they just lose that camaraderie. We're talking about you guys, and you had gone to the Coast Guard Academy, and then you met up here again. And we know the importance of having a battle buddy. I mean, does that help you guys out? I mean, it seems like, do you have a sense of community with each other because of like what you had gone through?
I think so. And the funny thing is Dan and I are such different personalities, but we also have so many.
Well, you have a Metallica shirt on and Dan has his tie on. He's looking.
But yeah, I think so. I think that we kind of back each other up, look out for each other, support each other, and help each other out in ways that are sometimes unexpected. Considering that also that, you know, I used to hate his guts when I was a young man. And now I'm like,
we can get into that later. But
we will.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely say Phil is my battle buddy. He, I actually knew, and you probably knew this. I knew that he was here, that he was staging, and the Coast Guard is kind of a small organization. So you hear about people, you know about people, you kind of, it's a little bit easier to keep track of individuals, especially when you're in the service. So, I was coming here regardless, because I met my wife here. And so, that was kind of part of the prenuptial agreement. You said that she would travel around the country with me in the Coast Guard when I decided to get out, or when the time came that we'd settle back here. Her parents live in Astoria. And so, she's got some roots, but, I knew that Phil was here, and it was nice to have that kind of reassurance. And, you know, coming in, Phil set me up and, you know, made sure that I knew what I was doing and kept me in line. So, you know, I trained him, introductions to the Coast Guard, and Phil kind of trained me introduction into high school teaching. So
that is true. Yeah.
Paybacks.
Yeah.
Payback.
He didn't make me do any pushups though. And
oh, I've been tempted. No, I'm kidding. I'm pretty sure you could out push up me, Dan.
Wait, you'd have to drop with him.
Dan, did you make Phil do pushups in the
Coast Guard? Oh yeah, absolutely. That must be eating me.
Because of the pushups.
Dan was really good at his job. At the academy, after 2 years, you're still a cadet. But when the new swap summer, it's like boot camp essentially for the academy. Those second year students are the boot camp instructors for the incoming freshmen or swaps.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, all summer long, you know, I'm running some pushups, learning my indoc, getting corrected, learning how to be in the military, how to wear the uniform. And I got in a lot of trouble and I made a lot of mistakes. And a lot of times Dan was there to hold me accountable and
get him on the straight and narrow.
I was at the academy. There's like an academic and a military ranking. Mm-hmm. And by the end of my first year, I was dead last militarily in my class. I got in so much trouble. Like the three people behind me in the list all got kicked out for lack of suitability. And I barely got through my first year. And so it's a miracle I made the rest of those years work. But yeah, it took me a while to figure out how to act a proper cadet and a proper officer.
When I first got out in 2007, I really kind of dove into helping combat veterans with PTSD.
Uh-huh.
And it was really difficult. I did that for like 10 years, just going with Sean, if you don't help me out right now, I'm going to kill myself. And I'm like, all right, I'll be over, you know, and stuff like that. But and I got so into that type of work that I kind of forgot, like sometimes we have to show good examples. Like these are people who actually got out leading great lives, they're doing good in their communities. And that is just as important as going over and try to help somebody, you know, all the time, I think.
Interesting you mentioned that. I have PTSD. And I'm actually only work mornings at the high school because sometimes it's a struggle for me just to get to lunch. So I have anxiety, depression, insomnia, PTSD. I ended up in the hospital in Key West with chest pains at 35. And it didn't, the third time I moved here, I didn't have a network and I did struggle with the mental health to the point where I was like, I went to the library one day and it's like, I'm just going to sit in the library because I can't do anything stupid if I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how bad I was for a while.
That takes courage right there.
That does.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Cause I know there's a lot of people who just like, I'm just isolating. I don't gotta be a part of anything.
Yeah.
And when they do that, they burn all their bridges. They have no connections. Just something as small as just going to the library and sitting there. That's a big thing.
So for me, that since you're bringing up the topic, as a teacher, I've decided to be very vocal and open about my mental mm-hmm. health struggles. Like I have depression, I have anxiety. There are days that my brain just doesn't work. Like it's all there, but it's trapped. It's hard to,
you know. That's brave and it's important too.
And I tell the students the first day of the year, like this was going to happen. And there's days when I'm not going to work well and I need you to be there those days. And the days that I'm 100%, you're going to get 100% of me. But mm-hmm. there'll be other days where I need you guys to step up. And there are like, and you could see like four or five kids in the room, their eyes just get big. They're like, that's me. Like there's kids in the room who struggle with those things. And so it's important to own your strengths and your weaknesses.
So you're still leading by example.
Trying to.
And so you said you had a network. So you might not go to like, you know, American Legion meetings or something like that, but you still got, at least you guys got each other.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you're reaching out to veterans. I know.
What we didn't mention is that you're not just math teachers, but we've alluded to it. You're the math teachers for our kids.
Oh, really?
Phil, you're
yours. Yeah.
You have mine.
Yep.
Yeah. And you have Sean's.
Yep. Yeah. And he's taught my kids and I've taught his kids.
Oh, wow.
Small town.
Yep. And you try to teach your own kids. They don't listen.
Oh, no.
No. No, my son said when I was helping him, he's like, well, that's not how Eero said to do it at all.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. That's fine. He's got two math degrees.
He's got two. And my math-ish degree isn't quite a math degree, but I did tally up as we were talking. At this table of four people, there's 11 college degrees.
I've got three. You have some two.
Three, I thought.
Three. Yeah.
Well, sure.
Undergrad counts.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Wait. Yeah. Well, if you count my associates.
I'm not counting those because there's a whole bunch of them.
Certificate of participation.
Yeah.
Yeah. My experience with the Coast Guard is very little, except for I had a student, Joseph, and he was law enforcement at the Great Lakes. And mm-hmm. the stuff that he told me that they did was just like, that's just like what I do. I mean, mm-hmm. it's really crazy, except he has to do it here. And for me, like,
and their mission doesn't stop. It's always going.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. the war is there, you know?
Yeah.
For me, I went to Haiti for a couple months for Operation Uphold Democracy when they ousted Erci. We had to put him back, and then Iraq. And then, but I think Katrina was some of the hardest time because I'm here in our country, you know, and like, you go someplace and you can't understand really what people are saying, or you don't, it's a totally different culture, but you're in your place and we're still carrying the same stuff. The sand is falling out from Iraq, is falling out of our gear, you know, and we're doing that. And it was really difficult seeing people kill each other over like water and candy bars. It's like, man, that's tough. So it's just, I think there's a lot of, I guess I'm just trying to say, I really respect the Coast Guard and what they do. Mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give to veterans who are looking for ways to stay engaged and connected in their post-military lives? Other than Thursday coffees at the Elks Lodge.
Thursday morning. Thursday morning is at 9 to 11 at the Elks Lodge. I heard it's great for teachers that are on summer breaks.
Yeah. And you know what? If you guys get really lucky, somebody will bring in some biscuits and gravy like last time.
No, that's good. Yeah.
Homemade
baked goods every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Staying connected is a challenge. So, I mean, there's advantages with today's technology. Like I still stay connected to a lot of my Coast Guard Academy classmates. And then there's a couple of groups that I belong to to try to stay connected. There's one here, Coast Guard Family Network, I think, is a Facebook site for mostly the families, but they do a pretty good job of, you know, current events and connecting people to things that are happening in the town. But early on, it is an effort. You know, you really need to seek out those opportunities, and they're not as obvious as maybe you would hope. And you kind of got to get out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Like we normally do. I mean, we're used to transferring and going to new places. And so you gotta treat it the same way and reach out for what is available. And then on the flip side, I guess for our perspective as people that are kind of settled into the community, we got to do a better job of advertising and reaching out to new members too. And I recognize that, and it's something that I need to work on.
Well, you're still pretty new to the community. You came here in 2020.
2020, yeah, but
that's just a year after I moved here.
You're a new guy, so you see a new guy. So
yeah, that's true.
So yeah, I am relatively new, but you know, after a couple of years.
Well, I've only been here for 3 years too. So I'm the new guy.
You're the new guy. I'm not the old guy. This time around, this tour, you beat me here. I would say get out of the house, get involved with anything that brings you passion, no matter how silly it might be. And for me, it was teaching. Like I wasn't planning on teaching when I moved here. I was planning on being retired, and then I felt like the high school needed me. So I started working. One of the things that I've noticed is in the military, you're not used to your community being your base, because you'll just get up and move. You're used to your service being your base, your shipmates, mm-hmm. your peers. Mm-hmm. And this is when the longer I've been here, the more in touch I am with the community, the more former students I run across, the more former students who now have kids that I've met. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time in my life, because I was a military brat as a kid, this is the first time I've spent more than 4 years in one
spot. Put roots down.
Yeah.
It's different.
And every year I feel more home here, and I see more people, and I feel more of the community. And for me, that's the part, is like, you got to look outside your normal bubble.
But all right. So you guys, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And like I said, that we're always trying to highlight, I don't want to call you guys success stories, because I don't know everything that's going on in your life, but like people who are actually doing good, and so we can show those as examples to other people who might not be. And like, there is life after this. It just, you keep holding on, you know? So thank you guys so much for coming and talking to us.
And I want to add on to that. We talk a lot about in Rogue Cell about how being involved with your communities is healing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're both representatives of that. And I want to thank you for your continued service to this community.
My only regret is that you guys didn't get into like geeky nerd math stuff, because I just
we could
going. I got time.
We were talking statistics before the mic bombs got turned on.
All right, everybody, 1, 2, 3, just do pi to as many as you can. I'll
3.14159265358979323839. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Together with Veterans Northwest Oregon or the Oregon Firearm Safety Coalition or the Department of Veterans Affairs. You can find us at roguecell.vet or facebook.com/groups/roguecell. If you or a loved one is experiencing thoughts of suicide, help is available. Please call 988 and press 1 for veterans. This line is answered 24/7, so there is always someone to help. And with help comes hope, and hope saves lives. The second of the 503rd Rogue Cell is produced by Brad Peitzig with support from Together with Veterans, and is hosted by Sean Davis. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, this is Brad. If you've been enjoying this interview, please tune in to roguecell.org to catch the full thing. And as always, thank you for listening.